Liebe Sportfreunde, herzlich willkommen zur Freitagsausgabe. Diese Folge ist eine ganz besondere, weil sie sprachlich anders daherkommt. Denn die heutige Folge mit meinem Gast Adam Commons, Sportdirektor des belgischen Hockeyverbandes, ist die erste auf Englisch. In dieser erfahrt ihr unter anderem, wie Adam zum Hockey gekommen ist, wie er nach seiner aktiven Zeit das Ziel verfolgte, als Trainer zu arbeiten, wie er als Australier zum belgischen Hockeyverband kam und was er dort genau macht. Außerdem sprechen wir ganz allgemein über das Hockey und Adam teilt mit uns eine ganz besondere Geschichte von den Olympischen Sommerspielen im Jahr 2000 in Sydney. Viel Spaß mit der heutigen Folge Sportfreunde. Zur Info, das Gespräch mit Adam Commons habe ich im November 2025 aufgenommen.
Sportfreunde. Der Podcast mit Mirko Birch.
So, Adam, very welcome to our podcast, Sportsfreunde. I'm very pleased that you are here and you take time for this. You are in the hockey field, in the world of hockey in Belgium. First question would be for me, how did you came into this hockey world? Why hockey?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. My parents played hockey. I grew up on a farm about 5 hours southwest of Sydney in Australia. My parents were introduced to the sport via a colleague of theirs. My mother was a school teacher. She played when she was younger, but my father was introduced by this colleague. And we just watched our parents play, and then naturally you start playing yourself. And that's how I began with the sport of field hockey.
Kurze Unterbrechung für einen kulinarischen Pass in den Lauf. Diese Folge wird präsentiert vom Go Chin Chin Cuisine in Zürich. Spitzenleistung fängt beim Essen an. Und die authentische vietnamesische Küche dort ist mein absoluter Go-To-Spot in der Nähe des Quartiers Wipkingen. Hier bekommt ihr Frische, die einfach gut tut. Schaut mal auf ihrer Website vorbei. Link ist in der Beschreibung. Und jetzt zurück in die Folge. And what's the passion, the beauty of the sport that took you to get in the sport when you get older?
Yeah, it's a very fast sport. It's quite technical. If you begin playing when you're an adult, it's very difficult. But if you start when you're younger, it becomes very natural. Like when I watch people play ice hockey, I wonder how they move on the skates because they've been skating all their life. And it's the same when you see someone that has played field hockey at a high level all their life. It's a great game to watch. It's very fast. The ball travels anywhere from 100 to 150 kilometers an hour. We have just a small stick to control it. It's super fast. And it's a really exciting game. And we had, I suppose, some talent in it when we were younger, me and my brothers and sisters. I have three sisters and a brother, and we all played hockey. And that's what we did at home in the backyard, played hockey, and that's where the passion began. And of course, as you become older, you have dreams of going to an Olympic Games or a World Cup, and I was fortunate enough to do that, and that's where I was always looking to go, because that's the pinnacle in our sport, and it was fantastic to see that level of hockey, and I dreamed one day to play an Olympic Games, and I did that in 2000.
Wow, so 25 years ago in Australia, it was Sydney, right?
Yeah, in Sydney. So my, let's say, hometown, played in front of a home crowd. I still remember the first game we played at 8 a.m. and my roommate, it was his fourth Olympic Games. And so he was very experienced and he said to me, it's an 8 a.m. match. It's hockey. We don't get huge crowds. So maybe the first game we don't have a big crowd, so a nice way to get into it. And we arrived about 1 hour before the match, and we come in the back of the stadium, so you don't see if there's a crowd at all. And we go directly to the change room, and I said to my teammates, I'm going to just go onto the pitch to see if there's anyone there. And I walked out. The stadium was entirely packed.
Wow.
And I got a standing ovation because I was Australian. And the first person to walk onto the pitch, everyone stood up and started cheering. And it's one of the most memorable moments of my career, walking into a packed stadium of around 15,000 people. At a home Olympics in Sydney, it was an unbelievable feeling.
Wow. So the field hockey sport is very popular in Australia, right?
It is. We have around 120,000 players. Whilst it's popular, all sports are popular in Australia. We have Australian football, which is extremely popular. We have football, as you know, soccer, as we call it, is popular. We have rugby league and rugby union, which is popular. Of course, basketball, sports like that, they're all popular as well. And they're all winter sports. Mm-hmm. And in summer, almost all men or boys play cricket.
Cricket, okay.
So what's the main summer sport is cricket or swimming. Yeah. And for women, a very popular sport there is netball. And it's mainly a Commonwealth sport played by the Commonwealth countries, but we have a million netball players in Australia.
Wow.
So that is, that's a lot of competition for the sport of hockey.
Yeah.
120,000 players seems like a lot, but when you compare it to a million girls playing netball, it shows how difficult it is to capture talent. And that's something that, you know, I think Australia's done fantastic in the sport of hockey. Considering all of the competition for sports, but we're a sport crazy nation. It's usually sport is the priority ahead of school, which is very different to the country I live in now in Belgium, where
it's not your this education important.
Always, yeah, education is most important in Belgium. And whilst we're successful in hockey and we do well there as well, it's a different culture, let's say, than in Australia.
In Switzerland, they once played a very good Australian soccer for FC Basel, Scott Chipperfield. I remember him, left wing. And yeah, he was very popular here in Basel, or here in Switzerland. I live in Zurich, but in Basel, because he was very popular, very, very good, very nice guy, and very good in what he did. So yeah. I remember.
Yeah, Scott Chipperfield is quite a famous name in Australian soccer, playing in Europe and having success. And of course, we've had other good players, but it demonstrates as well how broad the interest is in sport. The fact that I know who Scott Chipperfield is, he played in Switzerland.
How did you came down from Australia to Belgium? Did they called you, or did you had the dream to come to Europe, or What was this like?
Yeah. So whilst sport is very popular in Australia, only the football codes and cricket, you can earn a lot of money. And in Europe, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, in Germany, in England, it is possible to play for a club team there and earn a small amount of money. Not a lot, but enough to pay your rent and to live for a year. And as a player that was coming to the end of his international career, I was around 28 at the time, and I'd been in the team for 10 years, but I felt an old 28, put it that way. I thought I would like to experience something in Europe. So I retired from international hockey, and I had to choose where would I go to play. Now, the first choice is normally the Netherlands. They have 300,000 players there. It's an enormous sport, big crowds of 5,000 or 6,000 each weekend at a club game. In hockey, that's a big crowd. And but I was very interested in coaching, and I had a friend playing at a club in Antwerp, where I live now, in Belgium. And he said, "Look, we're looking for a coach. Would you be interested in coaching and playing?" And I really was interested in following the path of being a coach. And I thought, wow, what a good opportunity. I can coach at the highest league in Belgium. Belgium were ranked, I think, 15 in the world at the time, but there were some international players playing there, and the league was quite strong. So I thought, okay, this is a good opportunity, and maybe one day I might be able to coach Belgium.
Yeah.
You know, that was a bit my thought, and if I could coach Belgium, then maybe that would give me a chance to coach Australia, my home country, if I had experience coaching at Olympic Games, for example. with a smaller nation and then move to a bigger one. So that was a bit my plan.
Mm.
And that's why I came to Belgium, and I've been here almost ever since. I had a short period back in Australia, but I've been here since 2004.
Wow.
Apart from the 6 years that I coached Australia in, from 2010 until 2016, sorry.
So nearly more than 20 years you live now in Belgium. When you moved from Australia to Belgium, did you have to move or bring all of your family? Did you already had a family in Australia? Because if you did, I can imagine that's very difficult also to move around the whole world with family all socializing like this.
Yeah, I was 28, so I didn't have any children at the time. Yeah. I moved with my girlfriend at that moment.
Okay.
She was a hockey player as well, and we came to Belgium, as I said, to play and coach. After a year, she moved back to Australia, and we went our separate ways, and I continued to stay in Belgium and coach and play. And eventually I met my wife, and now we have a family here in Belgium. So it was okay for me to leave. I came with my partner at the time.
Mm.
I didn't have to move with children or anything like that. Mm. So I have to say now, I've got three children here in Belgium. And if I was to, people ask me often, would you ever move back to Australia? And that's a challenge, you know. They have all their friends here, their social network.
Mm.
Of course, they speak English. That's fine. They speak English and Flemish. But it would be difficult for them to leave all their friends. And
sure.
And indeed, my friends, when you've been here for 20 years, most of my social network is now Belgian people. And in fact, I have a Belgian passport as well. So
great. So two passports.
Fully Belgian.
Did you speak also a little Fleming, so the dialect of Belgium already?
Yeah, the dialect of Antwerp is a type of Flemish. Look, in the end, Flemish is Dutch.
It's
the Dutch language with some different words. Mm. I don't need to speak it because my work is in English.
Yeah.
Or when I coach my children, they're a bit younger, 6 and 10, their teammates don't speak English, so then I need to speak Flemish.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of lessons, but I have to say it's a very difficult language. But if I need to, I can get by with my small bit of Flemish.
It's kind of the same with the German people who moved to Switzerland, because there's also the Swiss German language is the difficult in pronunciation of German words, and they say I can try to understand it when Swiss people talk to me in Swiss German, but it's very, very, very difficult for German people to learn really the Swiss German language, because same as in Dutch, they're very this.
Yep.
Yeah, and for German people, it's very difficult to really pronounce these things.
Yes. Yeah.
So now you are high performance at Belgium. What does this means in
all?
Yeah.
So I'm the high performance director of the Belgian Hockey Federation, and when people ask what I do, I basically explain that I'm responsible for the staff, so the coaches, physical trainers, the medical team, the mental side of both the men's and women's national programs in Belgium.
Mm.
So the coaches and their staff report to me, and then in turn I report to the board. And that's like the formal part of it.
Mm.
But ultimately my responsibility is to ensure that the coaches and the staff have everything that they need, the infrastructure, the financial means, the support, sometimes that critical voice, so that they can do their job. So I work with our funding partners. I work with our board. I work with the education and development team. I work with our coach managers to ensure that our pathway of young players coming through is working correctly and we have that conveyor belt of players coming through. And of course, I work with the two national head coaches and their assistants in mapping out a clear long-term vision for the Belgian Hockey Federation to ensure that our high-performance department, our national team department, has sustained success over a long period of time. So I mentioned before, when I first started in Belgium, they were ranked 15 in the world. Our men's team, we won the Olympic gold, World Cup and European Championships in the Olympiad leading up to Tokyo. So we won the gold in Tokyo. We were in 2021. We won the World Cup in 2018 and we won the Euros in 2019. So we won the three major tournaments in that cycle. Our aim is to always be on the podium with our men's team and now with our women's team. So our men are now ranked number three in the world and our women have come from number 20 in the world to number three in the world.
Wow.
So it's, it's a very rewarding job. It's one that I'm really interested in terms of trying to have that sustained success. It's very challenging. And it's something that I look forward to, and I wake up every day enjoying the work that I do.
That's really great. That's something not everybody has for a job. That's really great to hear. Do you miss sometimes the job of a coach on the field?
It's interesting. A lot of people ask that. I like doing what I do and I loved coaching, but I get to coach coaches now. And so a really interesting thing that I do. So you still have impact on the field, but it's a little bit different than dealing with athletes all day, every day, which is also that's a really heavy role, you know. I often say when you're coaching at Olympic level, one of the best and worst days of your life is selecting the Olympic team. So you are making 16 to 18 players' dreams come true.
Yeah.
You announce that you've just made the Olympic team, but at the same time, you're shattering the dreams of 10 other athletes.
Yeah.
And it's a really challenging role that head coaches have. And now as a performance director, I work mainly with the head coaches and their staff and then our coach managers for our youth academy, let's say. So that heavy part I don't have as much as before. The week-to-week tournament on the side of the pitch, energy, winning, that type of stuff, of course you miss. That adrenaline is fantastic, but you know, there's a lot of pressure in coaching, as we see in football.
Yeah.
Coaches fired based on their results. There's a lot of job security. And that, I remember I used to get so nervous before games where I thought we should definitely win this.
Yeah.
And then I was most nervous because I was thinking, if we lose, that will be a disaster.
What's it going to do?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the responsibility that I have.
Kurze Unterbrechung für einen kulinarischen Pass in den Lauf. Diese Folge wird präsentiert vom Go Chin Chin Cuisine in Zürich. Spitzenleistung fängt beim Essen an und die authentische vietnamesische Küche, dort ist mein absoluter Go-To-Spot in der Nähe des Quartiers Wipkingen. Hier bekommt ihr Frische, die einfach gut tut. Schaut mal auf ihrer Website vorbei, Link ist in der Beschreibung. Und jetzt zurück in die Folge. Now I don't have this in the same way as in your new job. That's probably something you, let's say, enjoy in a way.
Yeah, you don't have the same. Of course, our funding and the financial side of our sport relies on having great results.
Sure.
You know, the better results you have, the easier it is to obtain sponsorship funding. We are very fortunate that we're in a good position here in Belgium. However, you maybe don't have that same direct pressure that you do as a head coach. I still, you know, get nervous before games and really hoping that the teams have the success that they're after. And that's what gets you out of bed each day, let's say.
Which two nations are ahead of you? Is that your third in the world ranking? Which are the two to beat?
Well, the Netherlands and Germany at the moment are ranked ahead of us. Mm-hmm. But the rankings are very fluid. Mm-hmm. For example, if we beat them in the next tournament, we could potentially go to number one in the world. We were number two for a number of years. In 2023, we lost the World Cup final in sudden death penalties. So we were still, right at the top of the world in 23 and 24. In Paris, we topped our pool. We were undefeated leading into the quarterfinals, and we had an off day, let's say, and we lost to Spain in the quarterfinal. We ended up coming fifth in Paris. Our girls' team came fourth, our women's team, which was fantastic. We didn't qualify for the Olympics in Tokyo, and within one Olympiad, we went from not being at Olympic Games to fourth place. Wow, we lost both the semi-final and bronze medal game in penalties. So we're really trying to get our women's team on the podium. We have a wonderfully talented young group. And the next 2 months, we're super busy. We have a lot of tournaments with our junior teams, but also with our senior team. So I'm looking forward to the next few months to see where we are after this last training block.
Mm-hmm. Now the next goal is, I think, Olympic Games in LA. Probably.
Yeah, we have the Olympic Games in Los Angeles. Our intermediate goal in between, a huge event for us, is also the World Cup. And the World Cup is next year in August.
Yeah.
And that is being hosted by Belgium and the Netherlands.
Oh, so based home.
Home World Cup. Yeah, it's going to be amazing. The men's final will be in Belgium and the women's final in the Netherlands.
Mm.
Of course, we're aiming to be in both of those games. Sure. But it's going to be amazing. We have a new stadium. And really looking forward to it.
Is this which city in Belgium and in Netherlands are the big cities for hockey? Is it the big cities that we would think about, like Rotterdam, Amsterdam, Den Haag, or are this also the small cities?
Yeah, the major cities are the biggest ones in both nations.
Mm-hmm.
So Antwerp, we have 6 clubs in Antwerp, nearly 7 if you count Blackbirds as being in Antwerp. Then in Brussels, there's many more, maybe 20 mm-hmm. clubs in Brussels. Then, of course, you have Ghent and Leuven as sort of the big hubs in Belgium. And, of course, in Holland, it's amazing. In Amsterdam, you have, I think, 3 clubs within 1 kilometer squared of each other.
Okay.
So there's like almost 20 hockey pitches in the forest there in Amstelveen, and that's Pinoquet, Amsterdam, and Hurley, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Rotterdam, The Hague, Utrecht, big clubs, Den Bosch, Andover. Like it's a huge sport in Holland. Every small village has a hockey club.
Is it same or similar to football, which it means with derbies? So if Belgium plays against Netherlands, it's a very special play, or Belgium against Germany, and like this, is this also very...
I think Belgium-Netherlands is always the
biggest one,
and that we love. Germany is a great rival. I think the Netherlands-Germany also is traditionally a huge game, since they've been strong teams for the last 70 years, let's say. A bit like Australia, very strong for the last 50, 60, 70 years. Belgium is the new kid on the block, let's say. We've just been strong since maybe 2016. So the last 10 years, we've started to become as a force in world hockey.
In football, there some people say it's more difficult. It's difficulter, more difficult to be a European champion than world champion, because in Europe, are the all in all the more very good countries and nations. Is it the same for hockey, or is this not the same?
Yeah, leading into the European Championships last year, the top five nations in the world were all from Europe.
Yeah.
Australia had dropped out of the top five. They're back in now. They're fourth at the moment. But indeed, you have, for example, very strong nations are the Netherlands, Germany, Belgium, Spain, very strong. England, very strong. And France is now really upcoming. They've been in the Junior World Cup final three of the last four.
Wow.
So the French men's team is doing really well. So that's six high-quality teams in Europe that are all within the top 10 of the world. Then the other major nations are Australia, I've mentioned, Argentina, India, of course. It's a massive sport.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, they won a bronze medal in Tokyo, and they backed that up with a bronze medal in Paris.
Wow.
Their men's team. And their women's team came fourth in Tokyo. They weren't in Paris, but they have more than a million players in India. And when we played the World Cup final in 2023, in January of 2023, I think there was 25 or 30,000 spectators, huge stadiums. They have a tournament or a competition called the Hockey India League in January each year, and players from all over the world go to play just for 1 month, and they earn a nice salary for that month. And yeah, it's a really, really strong sport in India. So they're the major nations. I don't think I've missed any. Of course, on the women's side, China is also very good. They won a silver medal in Paris, coached by a number of Australians, and they're doing really well on the female side.
Is it in Belgium? Is hockey, field hockey, more of a male sport or female sport?
There's more female players than male players, but let's say 55% female, 45% male.
So quite equal, yeah.
Yeah, very equal. One of the great things about field hockey is it's for all ages, for all genders. It's it's for life, you know. It's for all races. It's from all over the world. It is a really a sport where we pride ourselves in equality, in opportunity, in being able to play from 5 years old to 75 years old.
Wow.
And there's not many, you know, we have a world championships for over 70s.
Really? Wow. That sounds great. Wow. Well,
so, it's a wonderful sport that you can play for your whole life. And it's not as physical as some other sports. And when I say as physical, there's not that physical clashing. Where when you get older, it's very difficult to play rugby, for example, because you're going to break some bones, whereas in hockey it's possible. You know, football, I suppose, is very similar, but maybe it's a bit more physical than our sport. And that's what I really love about our sport of hockey.
I can imagine, yeah. I saw field hockey mainly when it's Olympic Games. Because then it's on TV, then it's on the broadcast, then everyone can and maybe want to see it. But when it's not Olympic Games, it's kind of a sport, a problem, who has a problem which a lot of this Olympic game sports have. They don't have this regular TV broadcast thing. Do you feel that and take that in your job, that's very difficult to really get maybe really sponsors and money for the sport, which it would need to grow more?
Yeah. We have a competition, a world competition called the Pro League. It's on every year, and that is televised in every nation that it's played in. That's one of the requirements to participate, that you need to have it broadcast on TV. So we're improving that. I would say, however, to anyone that watches the sport during the Olympic Games on TV, I would encourage everyone to go and watch the sport live, because it is, and that's one of the criticisms, it's very difficult to track the ball.
Yeah.
You know, ice hockey the same. When I watch ice hockey, it's very difficult to see the puck.
Yeah, that's a problem for me too.
Yeah, and then when you watch ice hockey live, it's an amazing sport to see. And that's the same with field hockey. I have quite some friends that enjoy watching soccer, football, and they never came to watch hockey. And I invited them one day and they were like, wow. And they come all the time now to watch because they're impressed by the speed and skill of the players. And they understand the sport because it's very similar to football in 11-a-side and similar size field, and the movements around the pitch are similar. Mm. Although we don't have offside. That's been eliminated,
and no VRR.
we have it. But it's you need to ask for it as a player.
Okay,
so the umpires don't ask for it, the players ask for it, and if you get it wrong, then you're not allowed to ask anymore during the match.
Okay.
So you lose the referral.
So that's one chance. So yeah,
that makes, and you can only do it for a penalty corner or a goal scoring. You can't just do it in the middle of the pitch and say, hey, you missed a fault. It has to be just for a penalty corner or goal or a penalty stroke.
What's the relationship between the fans, the referees and the players in football and in other sports? They're sometimes a little bit difficult because in football, with the VAR, it's got more difficult sometimes to understand the referees, to the decisions and like this. What is this like in the field, in the hockey field?
It's very different to football. The supporters from both teams sit side by side and they're cheering on. They're much more polite. Look, sometimes they can get quite vocal against the umpires, but in general, we have a wonderful atmosphere in the sport of hockey. A great atmosphere where the spectators get along really well. I know during my career, for example, the parents of the national teams of all of the different nations, they used to get together often and to each other. And even though they're supporting different teams. So it's a great atmosphere and really good relationship between the spectators, the players and the families.
Mm. So no difficult with the supporters, some troubles like this, but in the derbies or like that, as in sometimes in the football in Netherlands like this. That's great.
It's all remarkable, isn't it? In football, that, you know, your football team loses a match, so let's go and destroy the storefronts of our hometown.
Yeah, that's just. No words for this. No words for this. Here in Zurich, we have also football derbies, Grasshoppers and FC Zurich. And there are, since a few years, always the high risk time when they play against each other, because everyone knows don't go to the city if they play, because their supporters, the so-called supporters, gonna try to destroy the city and each other, and it's really a shame.
It's a pity that it goes that direction, but I think it's ingrained in the culture of the sport all around the world, so it's an anomaly.
Also in Netherlands, I think since a few years the away supporters are not allowed to enter the stadium when Rotterdam and Amsterdam, Feyenoord and Ajax playing against each other, which also says a lot, too many and a lot to part of the area. Is the are the referees mixed up, like in when the male teams play, are there also female referees or like this?
Yes, that's just started in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I believe, yes, at the European Championships last year, the men's final was umpired by two female umpires. They were judged to be the best, and they did a wonderful job, I have to say. We have a really outstanding umpire in Belgium, Lauren Delforge. She's just maybe early 30s.
Ooh.
And she's already done 2 Olympic finals.
Wow.
She was a very good player, and then she decided to choose umpiring, and she's just done a wonderful job. And she's at World Cup finals, Olympic finals, European Championship finals on the women's side, but now also she got a men's final. So wonderful achievement.
Mm. An unusual decision when you were a player to go as referee in football. I think that would never happen.
She was maybe just outside the national team, but she played for 15 years in honor division. She was captain of the Belgian indoor hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
And she just thought, okay, I've got a talent for this, and I'm going to go that direction.
Mm-hmm. If you can wish you something for the future for your Belgian team or for the whole sport of field hockey, what would it be? Would it be more attention from the people who watch it, to go to stadiums and watch the sports, or what would it be?
I think one of the challenges we have in our sport is that we need to get into our culture that we have to pay to watch our sport.
Mm-hmm. It's not for free.
To watch our sport. Mm-hmm. It's not for free.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've been trying to build the popularity of the sport, which we've done a great job here in Belgium, that's something that we're trying hard to overcome. I give an example. For me, it's very normal if I want to go and watch a football match that I pay 50 euros to watch a football match.
Mm-hmm.
But every time our national team is playing, I would have 20 or 30 or 40 people asking me for free tickets. And if I want to go and watch a football match, I don't ask them for free tickets. I pay
for it.
I go.
Yeah.
There's not many free ones going around.
Yeah.
And it's something that we need to try to get past, and that will help our sport grow. For example, our top league in Belgium, it's free to watch every weekend. And then you come to the playoffs, and it might be 15 euros to watch the playoffs, and people are complaining about it, or I'll watch it on television
because they're used to see it for free.
We had to change that mentality. On the other hand, the World Cup ticket sales are going brilliantly.
Wow.
And really going well. So we're looking forward to that. Our stadium has 15,000 seats, I believe, and it should be sold out for every game that Belgium plays in. So that will be amazing.
Yeah, that would be really, wow, great. And for yourself, for your professional future, is there something you would wish to achieve, to get, to see something? Or are you saying, I live my dream now in Belgium and it's all fine. I don't need to change something.
Oh, look, for me, the biggest challenge is to try to get both of our teams winning medals at the major tournaments in every major tournament, so World Cup and Olympic Games. And that's, as I said before, that's what I wake up and that what gets me out of bed each morning. Who knows in the future? There's a lot of professional sports here that I can see myself working in, maybe in an Olympic committee style position or a multi-sport federation. But right now I'm really happy where I'm at. And it's a pleasure to go to work each day and to work with the people that I work with.
It was a great, great pleasure for me, Adam, to talk to you about you and your profession, about your sport, your passion in this record for a podcast, Sports Founder. Very, 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 very thank you for your time. And I hope you enjoyed it. And I had also a little fun in it. Thank you very much.
It was great. Enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.